We're in a series called My Real Family, and in this series called My Real Family, if you haven't been here, we're almost done with it, to be honest with you. If you haven't been here the last 3 weeks, I encourage you to go online, listen, or download the Grace app onto your phone, and you can kind of check out where we have been. But in a nutshell, here's what we've said. We all have a family. Not all of us like our family, right? Not all of us like it. Not all of us would have chosen our family all the time. But we all have a family. And here's what also I know is that our families are very diverse, right? We each have a unique experience. So you're hearing everything that I'm saying or anybody says about family through your filter, and your filter is unique to you, right? And I know this about your family experience, it's not emotionally neutral, right? That there are a lot of emotions tied into our family experience. We said that this is a very timely and relevant conversation for another reason, and that's because our culture's having it. Our culture, I believe, knows something is missing and broken in our society, and so it's chasing it. It's chasing it because it wants to understand it. It's chasing it because it wants to experience it. And so it's going to chase it wherever it might find it. And so what we said we'd do is let's lean into God, see if he has something to say about the family. And sure enough, he does, right? And so here's what we've said. When it comes to the family, we said this, God has an ideal. You can go back into his story called the Bible and see God's heart on the family. He put one man in the garden. He brought one woman in the garden. He said, 1 + 1 = 1. That's a marriage. And I want, in the context of that thing, for you guys to multiply. I have lots of kids, right? And therefore, I want you to have a family. And it's through that lens I want people to navigate and experience life. God has an ideal, and you can tease that out through Scripture. Problem's this. That when it comes to my real family, what I experience is anything but ideal, right? That we have all kinds of things that happen that aren't really in line with God's ideal. And so it leaves us to deal with, well, how do I deal with what's real? I know God's got an ideal. And we said, well, we dare not give up on God's ideal, right? Dare not give up on it while we help heal what's real. Only thing I know to do that is this thing called the gospel, right? Only thing. Gives us a picture of the ideal, right? Gives us the power to pursue the ideal while we help heal, quite frankly, what's real in our families. 2 weeks ago, we said what's real in our families is that nobody has the ability to hurt us like our family. I've heard from tons of you after that one, right? Nobody has the ability to hurt us like our family. What do we do with that family hurt? Well, the only thing I know that we have to apply to that family hurt is the ointment called the gospel. And we talked about that. If you weren't here, you ought to go back and lean into that conversation. Last week, we said it's the gospel that gives us the power and the picture of a God who leveraged himself underneath of us at our time of need when we needed it most. And that becomes the power that literally can transform our families, that if we would submit to each other and leverage our lives underneath the lives of the people in our family to help them when they need it, it's the power to transform. It's the power of the question, what can I do to help you? That all of a sudden opens up all kinds of things in our family. Next week, I can't wait for next week, because next week I'm going to invite to join me up here for part of our time together, Jennifer, my wife Jennifer, and I'm excited because we're just going to talk about, okay, what does God have to say about parenting? How do we navigate this thing when it comes to the gospel? And we're going to share some things that we've learned, some mistakes that we've made, some things that people have taught us along the way. So I can't wait. Hopefully you'll come be a part of that. This week, here's what I want to talk to you about. This week, I have something to talk to you about that we all have in common. Quite frankly, what I want to talk to you about this week will apply not only to your family, it'll apply to all of your relationships. And that is this. One thing I know we all have in common is conflict. Anybody with me on that? Just shake your head and let me know you're out there, right? You got to help me this morning. I don't feel good, right? Family feud. Somebody's back here. That's me. And his wife's like, bam, you know, stop it, right? Family feud is not just the name of a game show, right? It's something that is common. It is what's real in our family. And when it comes to families, here's the deal. Conflict and feuding is not just real. It's very complicated. And here's the deal. Family feuds are something that goes on and on and on and on and on and on as long as you have that family, right? It's just a perpetual conflict. Here's some things I know about conflict in our families or in general, okay? You can write these down. You don't have to, but you can write them down. First is this. conflict is inevitable, but combat is avoidable. Okay? You ought to write it down, right? And somebody said to me before I came up here, said, I can't believe a couple weeks ago you said you and your wife fight. I'm like, really? Here's the deal. When you put two sinners together in the same house, you're going to multiply sin, right? That's what's going to happen, right? You're going to step on each other's shirt tail eventually. That's what happens in a family. Eventually, you step on each other's shirt tail. I told you a couple weeks ago, when I get ready to marry a couple, I say, hey, listen, you're marrying a sinner. That's what you're doing. And so you might as well expect conflict is going to happen. It is inevitable. But here's what I want you to hear today. That just because it's inevitable doesn't mean that combat is inevitable. That there are ways for us to navigate. Here's something else I know about conflict. You ought to write this down. People deal with conflict differently. Anybody tracking with me? People deal with conflict differently. Some of y'all in the room, you know what you are? You're peacemakers. A guy like me don't like you because you don't want to fight, right? So as soon as there's a conflict, like, okay, I'll give in, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. And you're like, what? It's over, you know? Some of you guys are sulkers. You know how that works, right? There's a conflict and you think the conflict's over and everything's been taken care of. And then you look at the person and say, you okay? Well, I'll be okay, you know, kind of like that, right? You know what some of you guys are? Come on, admit it, litigators. You ain't never wrong, right? Trust me, you ain't never wrong. And you can argue it and you can win every time, right? In my marriage, my wife was sitting here, she said, that's me. When we got married, I didn't know this, I wasn't that smart, but I was competitive, I was outgoing, I used words better than her, and she was the peacemaker, and so I could win every argument, and I did at first. I won every argument at first, and it was not very fulfilling. I was a litigator. Some of y'all are like animals, right? You ever heard this conflict, and we kind of show up like an animal? Some of y'all are like turtles, right? You go into your shell when there's conflict. Any turtles in the room? You hate conflict, right? And others of you don't raise your hand, and if your spouse don't raise their hand, right? You're a skunk, man. When there's conflict, everybody around knows about it, right? You make sure everybody gets sprayed along the way. We all handle it different, right? Now, here's what I know about conflict in our families. When I win the argument, I don't really win anything. That was a hard lesson for me to learn. You ever notice that? When I win the argument in my family, in my marriage, I find this, there is no trophy. Like, I don't win anything. And so it leaves you kind of empty. It's like, I won, and you kind of feel gross afterwards, right? I mean, I won the argument, and nobody gives you anything, right? So it's inevitable. Combat is avoidable. Everybody deals with it different. When I argue, I don't really win anything. And here's what I want you to write down. Conflict can create a gap, or it can be a conduit for growth. Listen to me, if you hear nothing else I say right now, I want you to hear this. Conflict is not bad. Conflict is not bad. Conflict is not bad. But it can create a gap. And it has for some of you. Some of you are in relationships right now and it's created a gap between you and your kids, you and your spouse, you and your siblings. But I want you to know this, conflict does not have to create a gap. It can be a conduit for growth. When I meet with young couples and they come in and they talk to me in premarital counseling, we inevitably will talk about conflict. I remember a couple came in to talk to me one time and I asked them, I said, hey, tell me about your conflict. Well, they wanted to impress the preacher, right? They want to make sure I'm going to marry them so they pass the test. And so they look at me and they smile real Pollyanna. It's like, we don't have conflict, right? And I remember I looked at them and I said, I'm sorry. And they looked at me, what? And I said, the fact that you haven't had conflict shows me that you haven't had the chance to grow in some profound ways in your relationship. Conflict's not bad. It can be the conduit for growth. I want you to write this down. Our fear of conflict sometimes causes us to oversteer in conflict. You see, the fact that we're afraid of conflict can cause us to oversteer to whatever our default is. So if we're used to getting mad when conflict comes, we can oversteer and overreact. If we're an avoider, we can oversteer and do the silent treatment. We oversteer in conflict. Well, how do we handle conflict in a constructive way in our families? Glad you asked. Look at your Bibles. In the book of James, chapter 3, look at verse 13 with me. Here's what it says. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. Now, we're going to read the rest of chapter 3 a little later, and chapter 4, clear down to verse 12. But here's what I want you to write down to start things off. I believe this from the bottom of my heart. I've met with hundreds of people, and I share this hundreds of times. I believe this nugget is worth the price of coming this morning, right? And here's what I would write down this morning. If you're in conflict in your family, write this down. When it comes to conflict, pursue understanding first, and then apply wisdom. Pursue understanding first, and then apply wisdom. Wisdom and understanding always hold hands. They go together. I believe that is so important when it comes to conflict in your family, on your team, in your business, whatever it is. You first pursue understanding, and then you apply wisdom. You read the book of Proverbs. Wisdom and understanding hold hands. Let me give you an illustration. When I was a coach, I had a kid who played the line for us. Usually you have your big kids playing the line, right? This kid was not one of our bigger kids, but he was as tough as a pine nut, and he was playing the line. One day, while we were running sprints, I realized something. This kid was the fastest kid I had on the team. I'm like, why in the world do we have him on the line? And so I was asking a question, can this kid catch the football if he's fast, right? I want to know, can he catch the football? So I said, Mike was his name. I said, get out there. I'm going to throw you some passes. He got out there, and he ran like a deer, guys. And I threw that ball as far as I could, and that kid ran there, caught it. Run it again. Do it again. Post, fade, whatever. Run it again. He caught that pass every time. I said, what in the world? This guy's an incredible wide receiver. I said, get back in here. Get over on this side this time. I want you to run a post on this side. That kid ran a pass pattern. He ran down. The ball hit him in the helmet. Missed it terribly. I said, well, maybe it's a fluke. He caught maybe 10 in a row over here. I said, get back here. I want you to run a fade route. Kid ran like a deer, and he didn't even come close to catching that football. Did it a third time. By this time, guys, I'm having a little conflict. I'm a little frustrated. I'm like, what in the world? He caught 10 in a row over here. He can't catch cold over here. I said, run it again. He ran it again. He didn't even come close. He got in that huddle. I remember I looked at him. I was frustrated. Because I wanted to use him as a wide receiver. I said, can you help me understand why in the world you won't catch the ball over here? That's what he said to me. He said, coach, because I got a glass eye in my left eye. And when I turn to look for the ball, he said, I can't see it. But when I'm on that side, I turn to look at the ball, I can see it. Listen to me. You know what happened? I was able, some of y'all laughing, right? I was able to apply wisdom, wasn't I? Why? Because I had understanding. You see, I wasn't going to put him over here, was I? Why? He had a glass eye. He couldn't see the ball. If I was going to put him over there, he could see the ball. See, here's the deal. Wisdom and understanding go together. And sometimes conflict is perpetual and never ends because we never pursue understanding. What do we have to pursue understanding? And I want you to write this down. First is this. I got to begin by pursuing understanding, and I got to pursue understanding the source of the conflict that I'm in. Pursue understanding the source. When you boil it down, I believe James is going to teach us this. There is only one common source that we all could agree on when it comes to all of our conflicts, whatever they are. And I think James gives us a secret as to what that might be. James chapter 4, verse 1 says this. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Great question, right? Great question. If I were to ask you that this morning and gave you a little bit of time to answer that in your family groups or with your marriage or whatever, what is it that causes fights and quarrels among you? What would your answer be? Well, if we're honest, we'd say, I tell you what causes fights and quarrels in our home. She doesn't do this, or he won't this, or they aren't this, right? Because down deep somewhere, right? We all have this feeling that if people would just do things our way and see things our way and just kind of do it the way we want it done, we'd have peace in the family. Can I get an amen? Anybody with me? We kind of feel that way. And yet what James is saying is, no, you're going to miss that, because what you're doing is you are placing your happiness on the shoulders of other people. I love something Andy Stanley says. He says this, as long as you blame others for your unhappiness, you will always be unhappy. You ought to write that down. Some of y'all aren't happy in your families, and it's his fault. It's my husband, it's my wife, it's my kids. And as long as you blame others, it's them, it's them, it's them, it's them, it's them, you're going to always, always, always be unhappy. You're going to be in this perpetual circle. So what does James say? Well, look back at James 4:1. Here's what he says. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from the evil desires that battle within who? Say it out loud. You. You know what the common denominator is? It's you. It's me. That's what James is saying. He's saying when push comes to shove, the source of our conflict is me. He goes on to say this, verse 2. Look what he says, verse 2. You desire, but you don't have. You covet, but you can't get what you want. So you quarrel and fight. Part of the problem, stay with me on this, this is so, so important. Part of the problem in our conflicts is this: we're not getting what we want. And if we own that reality, it's going to drop the temperature in our family feuds a little bit. If we would begin there and saying that part of the problem is I'm not getting what I want. The reason that there are things battling inside of me is that I want something so badly from the other people in my family. And it kind of stirs this battle that rages inside of me. Listen, it's one of two things. Either I want something from them, or I believe that they've taken something from me. I either want something from them and they're not producing, or I believe they've taken something from me. I think it's why James says this in verse 14, James chapter 3. He says, if you harbor bitter envy, a bitterness that comes up because you've taken something from me and I want to somehow get that back, I'm not going to be able to forgive because you've taken something that was rightfully mine, and selfish ambition, I want you to come through for me so that I'm fulfilled. In your hearts, he says, don't boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom doesn't come down from heaven. It's earthly, unspiritual. He goes on, he's on a roll. It's demonic. Some of y'all are like, that's what conflict's like in our family, right? For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder in every evil practice. Here's the truth. When we place our happiness on the shoulders of the other people in our family, and when they don't come through for us, getting us what it is that we want, you know what we have? Conflict. When they don't live up to their end of the bargain, you know what we have? Conflict. When their mistakes bring pain into our life, you know what we have? Conflict. You see, there is fighting because I'm not getting what I want. So let's practice something. Imagine what your conflict and my conflict might look like if we all, in the middle of our conflict, paused long enough to simply say this. Let's throw this up here. Do you know what the problem is? I'm not getting what I want. In fact, why don't we practice it? You guys say it with me? Let's say this together. Ready? Do you know what the problem is? I'm not getting what I want. Men, say with me. I'm not sure we did it well. Ready? Men, ready? Do you know? All right, ladies, I'm equal opportunity. Here we go. Ready? Ladies, let's say it together. Do you know? Here's the deal. We have to begin with this honest understanding that the source of our conflict is somehow a battle that's waging in us. It's a war inside of us. And it's beginning with realizing what it is that's driving us, what our family members are blocking us from, what we believe they're taking from us. And if we start there, if we realize there's something I'm not getting that I want and it's making this conflict, see, then all of a sudden the temperature begins to go down a couple degrees. Now, that's not where we can't end there, right? We got to go to another place. It's not just pursue understanding the source of the conflict. I want you to write this down. I got to pursue understanding the other person before I seek to be understood by the other person. I got to pursue understanding the other person. Simply put, I need to elevate the other person before I demand that they understand where I'm coming from. Anybody think that's hard? In conflict, right? You see, I start by understanding the source, and then I want to understand the other person I'm having conflict with, the other person I'm in a feud with. In fact, here's what James says, James 3, verse 17. He says, the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, and then I want you to read the words in yellow out loud with me. You ready? Here we go. Considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial, and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. I think it's interesting to me. You see, I got to pursue understanding the other person before I demand they understand me. Here's what he's saying, that applying wisdom means that I'm going to pursue peace. And so he uses these words. He says, it first of all is considerate. And here's what that word means, okay? So I kind of dug back in and said, okay, what do those words mean? Simply that word means it's gentle. Listen how this plays out, right? It means not being bent on standing for your own rights or making demands that others hear your needs. Considerate is the kind of wisdom that is not rude, overbearing, and harsh. It's a wisdom that is not ferocious and vicious about your opinion. That's considerate. Then he says it's submissive. Submissive is just, I'm willing to leverage my understanding underneath of you for the sake of understanding you. Submissive is, I want to hear you out. Then he says, full of good fruit and mercy. Here's what that means. Literally the words he used there is, it's distended, it's bloated with kindness and mercy and good intentions. I want the best for you. Imagine how that changes conflict, right? I don't know about you. I don't think I'm alone in this. When I'm in the middle of conflict, when I'm in the heat of an argument, right? Probably not the first thing I'm thinking, right? Like I'm thinking, man, how do I make my point? How do I make sure I get my way, right? He says, full of mercy and good fruit. And then he says, impartial. He says, impartial is just, I will not be judgmental and jump to conclusions too quickly. You tracking? Can you imagine how this kind of dives into your conflict? I will not listen to you with predisposed suspicions or predetermined judgments on you. And then he says, sincere, no hidden agendas. What you see is what you get, and what I say is what I mean. Basically, I'll pursue understanding you before I demand that you understand me. How do I do that? Three things I want you to write down. First is this. If I'm going to somehow pursue understanding them, I've got to begin by asking good questions before stating my position. Write it down. It seems so simple, but please write it down. I've been doing ministry now for 21, 22 years. If I could, and I talk to the staff that works here about this all the time, one of the great tools that goes unused in our human toolbox is the art of asking good questions. If you want to pursue understanding somebody, learn to ask good questions. Somebody, when I was early married, helped me with this because I was awful at it with my wife. I would say to her when we get in a conflict, and tell me if anybody else has ever said this, I just don't understand you. Anybody else do that, right? Come on, I'm the only one raising my hand? Yeah, thank you, Tim. Right? And then I read 1 Peter 3, and basically 1 Peter 3 says that I have absolutely no right or freedom or license to ever say that to my wife because God says, I want you to live in a way of understanding her. And I'm like, oh, geez. And this guy says, learn to ask her this question in the middle of conflict. Jennifer, will you help me understand why you feel that way? Why you reacted that way? You see, you want to take the temperature down. And what I'm doing is I'm inviting her to help me understand why it is she responded in a way that I didn't particularly appreciate or why she saw it a way that I particularly didn't agree with. You see, learn to ask good questions and then write this down, even though it's so simple, learn to listen. Learn to listen. I see some elbows being given out there, okay? Careful, all right? Here's what it says, James 1. Look at James 1. My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Because human anger doesn't produce the righteousness God desires. Here's the deal. Learn to listen. Can I give you some tips on that? When you ask the question, help me understand, look them in the eye. I mean it. I'm listening. Look them in the eye. When I would have a conversation with my kids, they were little, particularly, I would say, look me in the eye. We can have this conversation. And I want you to know that I'm hearing you. And then don't interrupt, and then learn to ask a follow-up question. You know what that tells them? That I'm not just waiting for you to get done talking so I can state my position, right? Tracking? Learn to listen, ask good questions, and then I would say this. Try to see it from their perspective. Here's the deal. Anger comes when you won't or don't see what I'm saying. Understanding comes when I see where you're coming from. Do your best to put yourself in their shoes. Pursue understanding the source. Pursue understanding the other person. Then I want you to write this down. Pursue understanding the potential damage I could create. Conflict, when it turns into combat, can kill. Conflict, when it turns into combat, can kill. Look at James 4:2. You desire, but you do not have. He's writing this to believers, by the way, followers of Christ. He's writing to a church. So you what? Kill. You covet, you can't get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. Basically what he's saying is there can be consequences to conflict when it is not resolved and reconciliation doesn't happen. Listen to me. I can be arguing on the right side of an argument, and I can argue all day long and still kill. Trust me. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about because some of you are parents in the room and you've killed the relationship with your kids so that you can be right in the argument. Some of you men know what I'm talking about because you've destroyed your wife's self-image with your flippant comments or your unbridled anger. It was like a hand grenade. It went off. 5 minutes, it was over, and left a lifetime of damage. Families that are fractured due to anger and unresolved conflict. Wives, some of you wives understand what I'm talking about because you have totally destroyed your husband's confidence by the way that you've handled conflict. Conflict can assassinate reputations. Conflict can steal joy from a home. Conflict can kill communication. Conflict can ruin security in a marriage. And conflict has halted intimacy in families, in marriages. Maybe in yours. Listen, if you're a married couple, I'm going to just, this is PG, but if you're a married couple and you're not enjoying intimacy emotionally, relationally, spiritually, and physically, there's an unresolved conflict. Be careful. Be careful. Because that will become a root of bitterness and Satan will have a foothold. Don't just turn a blind eye. You're a married couple here. It's already halted intimacy. Pursue understanding. It can kill. So you want to pursue understanding the source. You with me? Tracking with me? The other people before I demand to be understood, and I want to understand then the potential consequences of my conflict. So then how do I apply wisdom when I pursue understanding? Three things I want you to write down, then we'll be done. First, I apply wisdom by first and foremost inviting God into the conflict. To resolve conflict, you need to invite God into your conflict. Here's the deal. You ever been in a fight? I know you haven't, but just hypothetically, right? You ever been in a squabble with your spouse and the doorbell rings and company comes? So you're like, I can't believe, and you won't, and I'm never, and doorbell, ding dong. You're like, hello, right? Come on, anybody with me? Raise your hand. Anybody ever had that experience, right? What's the deal, man? Here's the deal. You fight different when other people are there, right? You do. You fight different in front of people. I think all James wants to see here is, what happened if you invite God into it? Chances are you fight a little different. Chances are you'd have conflict a little. In fact, he says this in James 4:2. He says, you don't have because you don't ask God. I think what James is saying is that what you want that's causing this battle in you, you're trying to squeeze it out of people who may not be able to give you what you want in the first place. So before you go raging into that conflict, why not stop and ask God? Say, hey God, here's what I want. I want to invite you into this thing. I want you to look at what's battling inside of me. I want you to help me understand them, and I want you to help me so that I don't create all kinds of damage. What if you invite God into the conflict? What if you fight in front of God? James says some interesting things. Look what he says next. He says, when you ask, you don't receive, because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Or do you think Scripture says without reason that he jealously longs for the Spirit he has caused to dwell in us, but he gives us more grace? That's why the Scripture says God opposes the proud, but he shows favor or gives grace to the humble. So what do we do? Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil. He will flee from you. Come near to God. He'll come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. What's James saying? Two real quick things. You ought to write these down. If I'm going to invite God into the conflict, here's the first thing I want you to write down. I need to invite God to take over. Here's the deal. Inviting God into the conflict is not inviting God into the conflict so that he will take up your side. Because when you invite God into the conflict, listen, worth writing down. God doesn't pick sides. God doesn't take sides when he joins a conflict. He takes over. And that's what humility is all about. Humility is me humbling myself, inviting God into the conflict in a way that I acknowledge that in the room, he is the one with the most wisdom. So I'm inviting his input. I'm allowing him to speak into the conflict. I'm asking him to take over. I'm asking him to look at the motives inside of me and the things that are waging war inside of me. I'm asking him to speak into me and tell me what is wrong and right in my own heart. And then he says, I want you to submit yourself to God. I'm going to trust you, God. I'm going to trust what you have to say. I want you to speak into the battle waging inside of me. I want you to speak into helping me understand the person I'm in conflict with. I put myself underneath of you, God. Humble yourself. Because God opposes the proud, gives grace to the humble. So I'm inviting God to take over. You're in charge. I'm not picking God. Don't use God as a witness for your side of things. God never comes into a conversation as a witness for your side of things. When he comes into it, he takes over. And he gives grace to you if you humble yourself. Say, I want you to take over. Show me where I'm not seeing this right. See how that works? And then when I do that, I invite God to do a makeover. I invite him to take over, and then I invite him to do a makeover. He says, wash your hands, clean your heart. He says, God, I want you to start with me. What's messed up inside of me? Where do I need to get this thing squared away? Where do I need to get this thing right? Where are my motives wrong? Where am I not understanding? If you're going to fight, fight in front of God. For the sake of time, I got to give these last two, okay? You with me? And also for the sake of my voice, okay? I want you to write this down. Not only do I apply wisdom by inviting God in, but I want you to write this down. Apply wisdom by leaving others out. Write it down. This is very, very important. James chapter 4, verse 11 says this. Brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or a sister or judges them speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you are not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? Can we add in there your family member, your wife, your kiddos? Here's the point. You ready? Do not take your conflict to work with you. Do not put it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it is you use. Don't share it with your friends. Don't discuss it with your ladies at your coffee group. Here's why. Ready? Really profound. It doesn't help. it doesn't help. And when you do, you are usually building a case against the person you're in conflict with instead of looking to help restore the relationship with that person. When you do, you're usually building a case. That's what you're doing. And so you're standing as the judge, so to speak, and you're trying to build the evidence for why you are right. Here's what I would say. I say it to people who come into my office in conflict, families in conflict, marriages in conflict. It's important to remember to only invite into your conflict, you with me? Only invite into your conflict those who will be able to help you resolve the conflict and restore the relationship. That starts with God. Okay? That starts with God. And there may be trusted counselors, people in your grace group, that love both you and the person in your conflict, only those who will help resolve the conflict and restore the relationship. Here's the deal. This is how gossip gets out of control. This is how it happens, guys. He said, I don't want you to slander each other, build a case against each other. Guys, look here a second. This is where damage and conflict can come. I've been doing this long enough. I know husbands, I'm just going to get real for a minute. I know husbands who aren't sure where it's safe to walk because of the way their wife has talked about them in public. And they're having conflict with their wife, and their wife has said this and that, and they're not sure where they're safe and what people are thinking. It isn't helpful. Put the fire out. That's what James said, leave others out. Now I want you to write this down, we'll be done, okay? Apply wisdom by inviting God in, leaving others out. And apply wisdom by pursuing resolution and reconciliation, not victory. By pursuing resolution and reconciliation, not victory. Here's the deal. I told you a couple weeks ago that my wife and I have conflict. I am not a fair fighter. I'm not wired that way. It's only the power of the gospel that gives me the power to be a fair fighter in conflict. This was one of the hardest things that God had to do in my life. Why? Because I'm competitive. I want to win. And when you get focused on winning the argument, you will lose the relationship. So how do you do this? How do you do this? I want you to write two things down. These are important. You start by following God's lead. You follow God's lead. It's important to remember that all of us are in conflict with God, and the only way for us to come near to God, like James says, is because God took the first step. 2 Corinthians says it this way. Let's throw it up there. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ. He gave us the ministry of reconciliation, that God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We're therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. How did that happen? Because God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. The one, listen, this is so powerful. The one who was totally in the right and did nothing wrong took the first step to helping reconciliation happen. The reason sometimes reconciliation never happens in conflict in our families is because nobody wants to take the first step. I'll talk to her when she talks to me. I'll say I'm sorry if she says it first, right? That's how it works. But you see, we have a gospel and a God who said, I did nothing wrong. I'm a holy God. And you know what? I'm going to take the first step to you. And I'm going to clear every obstacle that's between you and me. How did he do that? Jesus died for all of the cruddy stuff, the sinful stuff that I've ever done, thought, or said. You see, I follow God's lead. That's the power of the gospel. Reconciliation is gospel-centered. It's all about the power of the gospel, the picture of the gospel. And then I have to do this. I have to do this. I follow God's lead, and then I elevate the relationship. above the conflict. I elevate the relationship above the conflict. Some of us in this room are throwing away a relationship this morning for the sake of winning an argument. Listen, let's just get real. Some of us are throwing away a relationship this morning so that we might be the one who is right. And so we're destroying, damaging, throwing away a relationship. Here's what that means. And I'm just going to race through these and then I'm going to pray and we're going to be done this morning. But this is worth writing down, okay? This is stuff I would share with you in my office. Okay, if you came and you were having conflict. First is this. I must remember that exaggeration never helps. You always, you never. That kind of stuff never helps in conflict. Amen? Never helps. Because it's not true. It's not true, never and always. That stuff never helps. Second, threats will not work. Some of you are in marriage conflict and you're threatening to leave. You're threatening divorce. Listen to me. Fear will never produce what humility and grace can. Fear will never produce intimidation. You want them to stay, and so you're going to threaten them. You're not going to have security. You're not going to have intimacy. See how that works? Now, I want you to write this down. To compare is unfair. Some of you are having conflict with your kids because, well, you're not like your older brother. He was always did the right thing, kept his nose clean, whatever. It's not going to work. For that kid, it's not going to work. Why? Because they're different. They're an individual. You're only going to bridge, you're only going to make the gap bigger instead of bridging the gap. I want you to write this down. You need to remember that your words have power. Your words have power. There's power in the tongue. What you say matters. Do not think for a minute that your words don't have power. Some of your kids are grabbing a hold of the words that you're saying to them in the middle of conflict, and they're going to keep a hold of them for years and years and years. Your words have power. So in the middle of your conflict, listen. I used to do this with my kids. I would try to do this with my kids. I'd look at them in the heat of battle. Even now. You know, I got a 17-year-old. He's like 6'4", 2'9". I'm like, listen to me, man. I'm telling you who's in charge, right? But here's the deal. Here's the deal. You have to remember your words have power. And you say things to them that they know they're loved and that you elevate the relationship. I will say to them this. There's nothing you will ever do that will make me love you more or make me love you less, regardless of what we're having conflict about. You need to know nothing will jeopardize that, even this conflict. I want you to remember that. Write this down. Your tone matters. Ooh, that's worth it. That's a sermon in and of itself. Gentle answer turns away wrath. Harsh word stirs up anger. And last but not least, your timing is important. There's a good time and a bad time to say the right thing. There's a good time and a bad time to say the right thing. God, I got to be done for a lot of reasons this morning, but I know you're not done because your spirit is always at work. And so I know in this room there's conflict. And I know there's unresolved conflict and there's broken relationships, God. And I'm asking that you would lean into those relationships in a way that people would pursue doggedly understanding so they can apply wisdom. God, I pray that you would then restore relationships. I pray that some of the people sitting right here would go home and call their kid they haven't talked to. That some of these kids would go home and call their parents who they haven't talked to maybe for months or years. That siblings would reach out and say, I want to elevate the relationship above what we're having conflict over. That marriages would enjoy intimacy and not go through this facade. So God, I'm praying you would, the power of your gospel, help us to follow your lead on this. I pray this in Jesus' name.